Legend of Yuffie, Chapter 74.
Okay, so let's unpack that reset. We've got sort of three big movements here,
That's
right?
right.
First, the divine justice part, catching up with Wang She. Second, the political vacuum. I mean, the villain and the emperor both dying.
Right. Creates chaos, but also opportunity.
And third, the actual plan. The steps the new guys took to completely bring back Yuffie's legacy.
Okay, so let's dive into that first part, the East Window Reckoning. So Wang She hears about this massive Jin invasion. What's her first move?
Pure self-preservation. With Yuffie gone, the Song's best general, murdered partly thanks to her, she assumes the dynasty's finished.
Makes sense, from her perspective. So the source says she starts plotting, secretly planning to run north, defect to the Jin. She actually expects a reward for, you know, helping cripple the Song war effort.
Wow, okay. But things don't quite go according to plan, do they?
Not at all. Before she can actually leave, something weird happens. The text describes a sudden cold wind, a yin wind, it calls it.
Like a ghostly wind.
Yes, I blast through her room, makes her hair stand on end. She looks up and there they are. Oxhead, a horse face.
New to Mamian, the classic underworld guards.
Yep, leading a bunch of demonic soldiers. This isn't subtle, you know, it's direct, immediate karmic retribution knocking on her door.
And they're not alone.
No, they're dragging someone with them. Her husband, Qin Hui, a dead minister himself.
How does he look?
Terrible. He's described as PGI, swollen chains and fetters. Just total torment. And he only manages to say one thing to her.
What's that?
Just, I am suffering. Mm. A desperate plea.
Chilling.
And then he gasps out those famous last words, the confession. The East Window conspiracy has come to light.
So, admitting it, their secret plot to kill Yuffie is out. Known in, well, all realms, it seems.
Precisely. It's the final confirmation from the source himself, delivered supernatural.
So what happens to Wang She then, physically?
It's brutal and fast. One of the demon soldiers hits her hard on the back with an iron hammer.
Ooh.
She collapses, screaming. Her servants find her dead on the bed. The description is gruesome, tongue hanging out, eyes bulging, a really violent end.
So that's the end for the main conspirator still alive. But you said this was just the start, the catalyst for the political side.
Right. Her death removes a key player. But the real crisis is that huge Jin army. They need a leader fast.
Okay, so Emperor Yazong hears about Wang Shi's death. What's his reaction?
He's probably shocked by that, but the immediate problem is the invasion. He asks his court frantically, who can lead the army? Who can stop the Jin?
And some.
Silence, total silence. The court is just paralyzed. Fear, maybe incompetence, probably both.
This is where things get even stranger, isn't it? The supernatural element comes back.
Yeah, it's maybe the most shocking moment in the whole account.
Yeah.
The source says Yuffie's Zhang Hun, his loyal soul, his spirit, it possesses one of the officials.
Possesses him. Right there in court.
Right there. An official named Luo Ruji. He suddenly drops to his knees.
Oh.
And he declares, but it's in Yuffie's voice, your minister Yuffie is willing to go.
Oh, wow. How does Gozong react to that? I mean, this is the emperor who signed off on Yuffie's execution.
He completely loses it. Utter terror. He screams, actually falls off the dragon bed, and they have to rush him back to his palace.
He falls off the throne.
Yeah, he gets sick immediately after. Some kind of shock-induced illness, it seems. And he dies really quickly. The text just says, Buduojiri Gozong Jiebeng. Not many days later, Gozong passed away.
Just like that. Fear killed him.
It certainly seems that way. Or at least the shock and guilt were the trigger. But this quick death, this transition, it's actually crucial for what happens next.
How sad.
Because Gaozong's nephew takes over, Emperor Xiaozong. And the key thing is, Xiaozong is clean. He wasn't involved in the Yuffie conspiracy at all.
Ah, so he doesn't have that political baggage.
Exactly. He has the freedom, the political capital, to punish the conspirators and reverse the old policies without looking like he's attacking the memory of the emperor who just died under, let's face it, very weird circumstances.
Okay, so new emperor, no guilt by association, but the Jin army is still there. How does this new regime, born literally overnight from chaos, actually stabilize things? What's the first move?
They need legitimacy and fast. And they need more than just a military strategy. They need moral authority. Marshal Zhangxin steps up.
Zhangxin.
He immediately gives Emperor Xiaozong a 5-point plan, a blueprint, really, for fixing things, for restoring faith in the government and dealing with the crisis.
And Xiaozong goes for it.
Instantly. He adopts all 5 points. He knows he needs to act decisively to show things are different now. This is about rewriting the narrative fast.
Okay, let's break down this plan. What's point one? Justice, I assume.
Yep. First step, clean house. Arrest and punish the remaining treacherous ministers who helped Kin Hu. That includes Luoruji, the guy who got possessed.
Oh, right. Him.
Mokixi's, Zhang Jun, and their families, too. They're all thrown into prison. That sends a clear message. The old guard is out. Accountability is in.
Satisfies that public need for justice right away. Okay, what's next?
Point two is about symbolism and morale. Build a magnificent tomb for Yufei, the Yu Wangfen, and establish a loyalty temple, the Zhangxi, at Qixiangling.
So physically cementing his status as a hero.
Exactly. It's a huge public statement. Mm-mm. The state is officially declaring, Yufei was loyal, righteous, we value that now. It's meant to rally everyone behind the new emperor.
Makes sense. Point three, this must be about the family.
It is. Crucial step. Send an official to Yunnan province where the Yu family was exiled. Pardon them completely. Recall them to the capital.
Finally.
And there are two parts to this. One, restore the posts and titles their father held, Yu Yin Chizushu. So they're legally and financially okay again.
Right. Rehabilitation.
And two, critically, appoint Yu Lei, Yu Fei's son, to a military physician to fight the enemy.
Ah, so it's not just sorry about your dad, it's we need you now.
Precisely. We're fixing the past, and we're trusting the Yu family's loyalty to help save the future. It's a powerful dual message.
Okay, that's 3 points. What's number four?
Pure military pragmatism. Recruit the experienced generals who'd basically gone rogue or been sidelined, specifically Niu Gao and his men up in the Taihang Mountains. It's called Zhao Unk M. Kier, basically, offering amnesty to bring them back into the fold.
Get all hands on deck against Wuzu. Sensible. And the last point, number five.
This one's smart politics. Restore all the former officials who were pushed out or punished by Qinhui. Bring them back to their old jobs.
Ah, so it's not just about Yufei. It's about undoing all of Qinhui's damage.
Yes, and it's a genius move politically.
Yeah.
Think about it instantly. You buy the loyalty of a whole class of experienced administrators who hated the old regime. Xiao Zong basically reset the entire bureaucracy in his favor with that one step.
Wow, that is clever. And we see this happening fast, right? Like legally cemented.
Immediately. Zhu Sanwei, one of the officials pardoned under point five, instantly submits a formal document detailing all of Qinhui's crimes against Yufei. So the official record is corrected right as the arrests are being made. It's a whirlwind.
Okay, so the plan is brilliant on paper. New emperor, justice, restoration, military unity. But how easy is it to actually get people back on board, especially someone like Niu Gao, who saw his best friend murdered by the state?
That's exactly the problem.
Yeah.
Trust is gone. The wounds are deep. And we see this play out when they try to recruit Niu Gao.
Right. They send an official, Li Wensheng, up the Taihang Mountain. How does that go?
About as well as you'd expect. Yi Wensheng arrives, tries to be all formal. Please set up the incense table to receive the imperial decree.
And Niu Gao's reaction?
Explosive. He completely rejects the decree, the Z. The source uses some very colorful, very crude language. Basically, take your emperor's decree and shove it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So not impressed.
Not at all. He calls the previous emperor a muddle-headed ruler, Hun Jun, the one who let Yufei die. He is furious and deeply, deeply skeptical. He's not going to be fooled again.
So how does Li Wensheng even get him to consider it? He won't accept the decree.
He has to change tactics. He can't appeal to loyalty to the throne that's broken. So he appeals to Niu Gao's personal honor, his pride as a warrior. He subtly implies, well, maybe you're just scared to face Wan Yin Wuzu again.
Playing the cowardice card. Risky.
But it works. That's the only thing that gets through. Niu Gao is insulted, provoked. He basically says, fine, I'll go kill Wuzu first, then we'll talk.
He agrees to fight, but on his terms.
Exactly. But even then, there's another layer of caution. His brother, Ji King, steps in.
What'd he say?
He gives some very practical advice. He tells Niu Gao, look, before you commit our troops, you need to go to Yunnan yourself.
To check on the Yu family?
Yes. Go see with your own eyes that Madam Yu and the children have really been pardoned and are safe. Then we can trust this. It shows where their real loyalty lies.
With the Yu family, not necessarily the new emperor yet.
Wow. Their trust is earned, not given. Especially not after what happened.
Okay, so Niu Gao is heading off to verify things. Meanwhile, what's happening in Yunnan? Does the pardon arrive?
Yes, the official Chen Zongyi gets there and successfully delivers the pardon to Madam Yu, Yufei's mother. Their long exile is finally over.
Must have been incredibly emotional.
The sources describe huge relief immediate support from locals. Li Shufu, whose daughter Yunman is married to one of Yufei's sons, Yu Lin, immediately brings her to join the family. They're all going back to the capital, Linan, together.
The journey back must have been something, a public symbol of restoration.
Absolutely. And the sources even include this detail that shows life moving forward, a sense of hope returning.
What's that?
They actually hold a wedding ceremony on the way back at a place called Pingyin Pass.
A wedding? In the middle of all this?
Yep. Yu Lai gets married, and so do his brothers-in-law, Han Qilong, Han Qifeng, Niu Tong. It's like the family isn't just pardoned, it's growing. It's whole again, ready for a new chapter.
That's actually quite poignant, a symbol of life continuing.
Mm-hmm. And then, as they're traveling, they run into Niu Gao.
Ah, the meeting on the road. He was going to check on them.
Exactly. He sees Madame Yu, rushes over to pay his respects, and she seizes the moment. She knows this is the chance to bring him fully back into the fold.
What does she say to him?
She basically appeals to his sense of duty, his loyalty to Yufei's ideals. She tells him to give up the bandit life, to serve the state now, that fighting for the Song now is the true way to complete loyalty and righteousness. Yi Kuan Song Yu Weixi.
And does he listen to her?
Instantly. He says her words are Shen Shi Yu Li. Extremely reasonable. Basically makes perfect sense. He agrees right then and there. He heads back to Taihang Mountain to gather his troops and follow them to the capital.
So Madame Yu succeeds where the imperial decree failed. Loyalty to the family brings him back.
It really does. It marks the successful reintegration of these crucial battle-hardened troops. The plan is working, but it needed that personal touch, that confirmation of trust. Back in the capital, Linan.
Mm-hmm. Led by Madame Yu and, of course, the famously fiery General Niu Gao.
Right. And this isn't just a military parade coming home. It's like the political trigger for this whole reversal of fortune.
And it happens fast. There's a new emperor, Xiaozong. He's in charge now. And he needs to, well, stabilize the state ideology, basically.
So first things first.
Correct the record, officially. But he does it cleverly. He doesn't blame his predecessor directly. That would be risky, destabilizing.
Oh, okay.
Instead, he just confirms the injustice. His previous emperor was, you know, misled by wicked officials.
That's such smart politics, isn't it?
Yeah.
It confirms Yufei was always loyal. The problem wasn't the throne. It was corruption around the throne.
Precisely. And once you restore that foundation of loyalty, bam. The floodgates open for making things right.
And they really go all out on the honors.
They absolutely do. Madame Yu, Li Shi, she's formally made the first grade lady of East State.
Yeah.
That's not just a nice title. It's full restoration, status, wealth, everything.
And the sons.
Crucially, all four sons are made marquis. How'd you?
All four. Not just the heir, Yu Lei. Why is that significant?
Well, I think it shows the sheer scale of the reversal. They weren't just putting the family back where they were. They were elevating the entire lineage.
Ah, to protect them.
Exactly. Ensure their prominence, make them safe from future political winds. The injustice had to be completely overturned. And then you have the generals who fought alongside them. You get Ji King, four others.
What about them?
They get this really pointed title. Generals who exterminate the barbarians. Seals the deal, right? These guys are the righteous patriots.
Okay, so the restoration really peaks the very next day with this huge imperial sacrifice.
Yeah, the emperor himself leads the officials outside Kontang Gate right to the Yu Wang tomb. This is not some quiet affair. It's a massive public statement.
And the honors keep coming.
Oh, yeah. The list tells you everything about needing complete closure. Yu Fei, posthumously made Duke of East State. His son Yu Yun, executed with him. Marquis of Loyalty and Martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something really insightful, I think, about the author's detail work. The recognition of his daughter.
Right. Miss Yimping. Honored as the Lady of Filial Piety and Harmony. Why give a separate title to the daughter? What's that add to the narrative?
It addresses the trauma of the whole family unit, you see. The audience reading this would have felt that deep personal loss, not just the political stuff.
Makes sense.
So by honoring the daughter, the author makes sure everyone harmed by the injustice, even non-soldiers, gets state-level recognition for their virtue. It makes the correction feel total.
And it goes even wider than the immediate family, doesn't it? The sources mention honoring minor figures too, making them local deities.
Yes. Shi Quan and Wang Heng, they become the local gods of specific bridges and post stations.
That's fascinating. Why go that far?
Well, it shows the moral correction had to soak into the spiritual world, too. It's like an ideological cleansing of the state's records, basically saying, look, not only did the state mess up, but heaven itself saw the virtue in even the smallest acts of loyalty.
Wow.
It just hammers home this idea that moral order is back, completely restored from the emperor down to the local gods.
Okay, so we've got this massive state-run spectacle of justice unfolding.
Yeah.
Big public ceremony. But then the narrative does something interesting. It shifts focus to this very quiet, intimate interruption.
Exactly. Suddenly, two men appear at the tomb. They're in deep mourning clothes, crying their eyes out, offering their own private sacrifice.
Not officials, not generals.
Nope, just ordinary citizens who've been grieving privately for years.
And this is where we get the hidden history, right?
Yeah.
The acts of courage that happened when nobody important was looking.
That's it. These two guys, Wang Neng and Li Zi, they reveal their role. They were just admirers of Yufei, not political players, just moved by his loyalty. Deep respect.
And their story really contrasts with the big official ceremony.
Hugely. They couldn't save the general, couldn't stop the execution, but they did something incredibly risky afterwards, something treasonous, actually.
What did they do?
They bribed the prison guards to smuggle the corpses of Yufei and his son out. Over the wall.
Over the wall. Wow. That detail really emphasizes the danger, doesn't it? Shows how much contempt ordinary people had for Qin Wei's regime, risking death just for a proper burial.
Absolutely. And they preserved the bodies, hid them in coffins. Somewhere called Luoshi Kene translates as snail shells, suggests, you know, some hidden, maybe humble spot.
And they've been mourning ever since.
Ever since. Wearing mourning clothes all those years, silently loyal while Qin Wei was still alive and powerful. Years of hidden grief and defiance.
What really gets me, though, is what happens right after they confess this. The family, Madame Yu, Yu Lelei, they try to stop them, thank them properly.
And they just vanish, depart immediately, won't be detained. Well, it elevates their actions, doesn't it? Makes it pure moral heroism. They weren't after rewards or status or money.
They just wanted to do the right thing.
Exactly. The satisfaction of upholding moral principles. And the narrative backs this up later, says they were rumored to have become monks, lived past 90.
Wow.
And specifically refused gifts of gold and silk from Yu Lei later on. Donated it to a temple instead.
So Act I gives us the big top-down political justice.
Yeah.
State-sanctioned moral correction.
Right.
And Act II gives us the foundation, this quiet, pure loyalty, untainted by ambition.
Perfect setup.
Yeah, sets the stage perfectly for the final act, the really visceral settling of accounts.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we pivot from that quiet, pure loyalty to the loud, messy business of retribution.
Mm-hmm. General Niu Gao is back in the picture alongside a legal expert, Zhu Sanwei. They're at the Dali Temple, ready for the trials.
And the accused.
The main conspirator still around, Xin Ji, Zhang Jun, Mo Qixi, and Lu Ruji.
So it's a legal proceeding, technically.
Technically. But Niu Gao, he's basically the embodiment of popular fury. He is not interested in legal niceties.
He's there for vengeance.
Absolutely. He represents that raw desire for payback, and he keeps jumping the gun on the questioning.
Like with Qin Ji, accused of faking decrees.
Before the guy can even open his mouth to defend himself, Niu Gao just orders 40 slaps.
Mm-hmm.
And the text gets really graphic, says his face was left like a buttock.
Oof. Visceral is right. It's pure humiliation.
Exactly. These were powerful men. Their power was tied to their dignity. So being physically beaten, publicly disgraced, narratively, that's way more satisfying than just a quick death.
And Zhang Jun gets the same treatment.
Same thing. 40 heavy slaps for, quote, killing the loyal.
And then Mo Qixi and Lu Ruji try to blame Qin Wei, who's already dead.
Oh, the classic move. Pass the buck. Niu Gao completely loses it.
What happens?
He shouts this amazing curse. It's pure theater. Which is pretty strong stuff.
Uh-huh. I can imagine.
And then orders 40 heavy boardings for each of them. Beaten with boards so badly they're bleeding everywhere, nearly dead right there in court.
So the trial itself is a form of punishment. Immediate. Painful.
It's a spectacle. Designed to show their villainy was so bad, it demanded instant physical payback, even before the official sentence.
So once Niu Gao's rage has had its moment, Zhu Sanwei, the legal guy, steps in for the final verdict.
Right. And the sentences are absolute, not just death, but total erasure of honor.
Starting with the mastermind, Qin Hui, and his wife, even though they're dead.
Especially because they're dead. The sentence is the most severe. Zhang Guanluxi, beheading in their coffins, publicly disgracing the corpses.
Wow, why?
It signifies their treason was so profound, so damaging, that even their remains deserve no peace. It's reserved for the absolute worst traitors.
And the living conspirators. Tinchi, Zhangjun, Mokixi, Luoruji.
Immediate execution. Li Jibuwang. Immediate execution without fail. No appeals, no delays.
And their families.
Exiled. Wives, children, everyone. Sent off to the harsh, remote region of Lingnan. Total political annihilation of their line. The emperor signs off on all of it. And guess who gets appointed execution supervisor?
Gotta be Niu Gao.
Of course. The embodiment of Yufei's loyal military force gets the job of overseeing the physical destruction of the traitors.
And the execution itself, the staging, is incredibly deliberate, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Outside the Qintang Gate at Qixi Ridge, right below Yufei's tomb.
So the traitors die literally at the site of their victim's memorial.
Exactly. And the text says the citizens of Lingnan are watching, joyful, shouting, "Heaven's principle is clear. It's total public validation. Moral order is visibly restored."
And the sequence of the execution.
Highly symbolic. First, they bring out the coffins of Qin Hui and his wife, open them up.
Oh, wow.
Sever the heads from the corpses and place those heads on the sacrificial table. They have to witness the end of their partners in crime. And then, bam! Zhang, Tin, Luo, and Mo are immediately beheaded.
So the final detail, this sort of long-term punishment. Justice isn't just death here. It's permanent, visible humiliation.
Absolutely. The emperor grants Madame Yu this huge amount of raw iron, 500 caddies. That's a lot of iron.
What for?
With a very specific instruction. Cast permanent images of four people, Qin Hui, his wife Wang Shi, Zhangjun, and Mo Kixi.
And what happens to these iron figures?
They are made to kneel eternally. Before Yufei's tomb.
Wow. 500 caddies worth of kneeling figures. That emphasizes the scale of this public demand for accountability.
Right. These iron statues were explicitly meant to satisfy the public anger, the Gongfen. They become this permanent physical proof of accountability. And, you know, that tradition has lasted.
It's an incredible cultural symbol. It says that for some crimes, maybe the worst crimes, the public needs more than just a legal verdict. They need a physical symbol of shame that lasts for generations.
Exactly. The kneeling figures turn the tomb itself into this ongoing theater of justice, a constant reminder. This is what happens when you betray loyalty.
Right. Just as the executions happen.
Yeah. This massive shout, this uproar erupts outside the tomb gate, shakes the ground, startles Madame Yu and Niu Gao.
Kind of a cliffhanger.